You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
This edition of It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, your partner for global wealth creation. Welcome to It's My Money. It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, South Africa's multi-award-winning boutique wealth manager. Today I'm speaking to Aaron Ruttenberg, and we're going to talk about something we've spoken about so many times before, but it cannot be overstated. We cannot talk about it enough because it is, the numbers tell you that it is terribly important. And the, I suppose the headline is why global diversification is the cornerstone of wealth creation. Aaron, how many times do you have to sit down with your clients and tell them this and drum it into them?
Hi, Lindsay, and happy new year to you and your listeners.
Thank you very much.
I think what's important in this article that I've written that's just been released today is more about, you know, not how to diversify offshore, but why it's so important and why we feel the need to really remind investors of certain very important points that they forget. And they're small, but they add up. And these are the likes of when you get clients, and believe me, I do, asking where the Rand will be at in the next year or two. And, you know, we then look at headlines from articles that have been written, and we go and look at them. And in my article, I mention, you know, a December 31st headline in Network 24, which said JSE will end 9%, you know, is about to end 9% higher, you know, really drum rolling the South African economy, as well as, you know, particularly our market, and the chief economists making bold predictions on the Rand. And, you know, if you had to listen to those chief economists of these insurance companies, you would have been on the worst side of that investment. Yes. And that's why this is more about the discussion of how that how vital it is really to take your money offshore.
It's also very interesting because you say that people have jobs and they are employed by a giant South African institutions, and they're told to say this, aren't they? They can't be seen to be disloyal. It is their job to promote local stocks, local equity funds, local fixed income funds, etc. So it's almost as though when they go home, they say, "I didn't really believe what I said today. Maybe I'm being cynical." But it seems to me that that is the case. Whereas with Brenthurst Wealth, you just tell it as it is. In other words, diversify. Diversification is the key. Geographic diversification.
Exactly. Look, when you look at the type of people that we are and who we represent, that's our clients who are paying us for money, well, to invest their money, to tell the truth, and to sometimes tell the hard truths.
Exactly.
Which is a separate situation. But the point is, when you look at the likes of, you know, how the world is turning in terms of now that Trump is president, and, you know, the traditional media has turned on its head because the likes of X, or, you know, formerly Twitter, is now what we look at for news. You know, traditional media cannot always be relied upon anymore globally. That's why Elon Musk is as big as he is today. And when we come back home and we look at the likes of these people who have made these, you know, investing's about narratives, so who have made these bold claims, you know, of how well the local stock market's done. That's fine if it's done well, but they have failed, or their narratives have failed to even address the resounding bull market of the NASDAQ and the S&P 500. And numbers don't lie. You know, at the end of the day, the JSE comprises of less than 1% of global equity markets, and the NASDAQ and Wall Street collectively account for nearly 70%. And numbers do not lie again. So you need to understand that if you had to invest just as 1 million rand 10 years ago in the JSE, your investment would be worth 2.16 million to be exact. Whereas if you invested in the NASDAQ, it would be life changing at 9 million. 10 years ago. And if you just balanced that 1 million between the MSCI World and the S&P 500, you know, your returns would have almost tripled that of the JSE.
Just let me validate that point you've just made. You say in your article, which you kindly sent me, it says, even a balanced global portfolio split between the MSCI World Index and S&P 500 would have more than doubled the returns from sticking to local markets. And the S&P grew 23% last year, NASDAQ 29%, MSCI World Index 22%, JSE pretty lackluster. And I don't know which currency you use, the Rand or the dollar.
Rand.
Or the Rand. Yeah, it's just not good enough.
no, it's not good enough. And then you've got to take the next part into account. When I mentioned in the beginning of this discussion about the smaller contexts, and that is the inflation that we have to still pay. And there's two types of inflation, I call it. And I mean, I'm just springboarding here. I'm not specifically looking at the article, but there's two types of inflation. Are the inflation that we have to pay when we have a weaker rand, and the inflation that is paid by, you know, in foreign currency terms, the price of our everyday goods that we use that we have to import.
So we import inflation when the rand weakens. That's what you're saying.
Yes, we import inflation as well as their specific inflation at the same time.
Yeah, and inflation is a tax on everybody. It doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor or somewhere in the middle. If inflation is high, it means that you are less well off. You say for South Africans, offshore investing is not just an option. And you drum that into people, as I said earlier in my commentary. And do people sometimes resist that? Do they want to be rah-rah South Africa and want to be patriotic? Or do they say, yes, I want a few South African stocks, but on the other hand, I want to be overseas? Is that the sort of discussion you have?
A lot more people are becoming less patriotic. They are seeing the light many more times, especially from what I see, and I speak for our clients at Brandhurst. We see a lot more people becoming less patriotic because they know that they are not managing to become globally – they're not being able to keep up with global expenses, whether it to be traveling, even just economy class from South Africa to anywhere in the world and then – you know, buying food or entertaining themselves, just enjoying their lives. And then also, just like I mentioned, buying certain items that we import when we import inflation. Things are becoming a lot more expensive, and they're beginning to realize that it's not because of just because of what the government here does. It does have a certain position in to it is another discussion, but it's also about what happens overseas and how people's money are growing there compared to how it is growing here. So therefore, people can raise the prices there compared to the where we have the likes of many headwinds. So, yeah, people are becoming a lot less patriotic, and I can go deeply into the reasons why.
And when you say that, I mean, it doesn't mean that they're less patriotic towards the country. It's just they're less patriotic towards investments in the countries because they're two different entities.
Correct. Magnus puts it the best. Be patriotic towards your rugby team, but not towards your money. And It's such a good point. When you look at your money, you've got to look at the fundamentals of what's going on. We've had no load shedding for the past 300 days. But that's fine. We still have to remember that in the past, in 2007 and 2008, when it started, there was a bit of load shedding. It just left and it came back. In 2010, it left, it disappeared for a bit and it came back. I'm not overly optimistic that it's never coming back. We've also had the GNU, which was, you know, holding strong for 6 months. And, you know, but
until the last few days.
Yes, you know, the biggest structural issues haven't gone away. Land expropriation, infrastructure challenges, unemployment, and the pace of reforms, remain significantly, there's significant headwinds. There's infrastructure, you know, that might be moving in the right direction, but the bigger picture is still challenging. That's the main point, and people are seeing it. Whether you're literally physically driving on the roads and hitting a pothole and having to go and replace your tire when you just started saving for your emergency fund and you're in a good position, and when you need something new that was imported. You know, we've got a lot of unemployment here, 30% of unemployment. 8 million people are economically active but unemployed. And if you contrast that importantly here with the number of income taxpayers, which are around 6 million, less than 2 million of those 6 million pay over 75% of personal income tax. So these people are not really paying taxes. They're not seeing what they are getting for the taxes they're paying. And that's the difference between, you know, being patriotic towards, you know, what you're getting and what you're paying your government for versus, you know, being patriotic to your rugby team and then just rather getting your money away and letting it grow.
Yeah, the rugby team is one of the few things that you can almost guarantee will be a winner. The other thing that I really want to talk about, just briefly, if you would, is the rand. Do not invest because of where you think the rand is going. That's my view. But when I came to South Africa, and that was in 1988, and I spent 28 years in your beautiful country, the rand was, one rand was $1.90. Or rather, $1 was around 90, 1.90. And look at it now. Let's call it 19. So 10 times, what is that, 10 times weaker? But don't invest because you think the rand's going to go weaker. Invest because you want to diversify and you think that the investment overseas is a good investment. And that's where Brentus comes in, of course.
Exactly. At the end of the day, we can even look at a lot of bold claims. One of the biggest insurers said 15 rand at the end of 2024, close to 19. That's exactly to your example. Rather than relying on speculative short-term predictions or caring what the last predictions are for the short term, and believe me, people aren't going to even listen to this. They're still going to ask. Investors are far better served by focusing on these globally diversified long-term strategies. And, you know, looking at the likes of where the narratives are, tech's the narrative. We use it in our daily lives, AI, especially those driving innovation and e-commerce and cloud computing. You know, they have the pricing power and their resilience, and they have that resilience compared to the smaller companies. So one doesn't even need to be invested in the small, you know, very much down the risk curve companies, because the higher, the bigger behemoths have a lot of cash. They flush with cash, and you know, they are able to withstand any bear market or crash compared to the very much smaller companies. So you can really create a diversified offshore portfolio with just a diversified set of narratives that we're seeing today, and give yourself a much better opportunity of, you know, creating wealth.
One of the saddest things about the JSE is that there isn't any new technology companies coming into the JSE, no new startups. I mean, we've just seen yesterday a startup from China disrupting markets. It's called DeepSeek, which you've obviously seen. But the JSE seems to be stagnant. And one of your paragraphs in your piece says big tech simplicity and the case for offshore investing. And the case is very simple. It's dynamic, Aaron. It's a dynamic environment, and you've got so much to look forward to. Some will fall by the wayside, like Nokia and BlackBerry did all those years ago, and some will, you know, flourish, as we've seen with the AI companies. It's something that is really exciting. The JSE, to me, is not exciting anymore.
No, it's not exciting. And funnily enough, when you look at the biggest companies on the JSE, they just happen to be offshore companies that are dual listed. So they're actually primarily listed on other stock exchanges.
Like British American Tobacco, for example.
Yes, British American Tobacco is a great example, together with Richemont. They are very much global, mature, quality companies, which you can already buy offshore. So you don't need the JSE for that, which makes the JSE quite significantly smaller. And, you know, for investors with, you know, one day when we discuss the how, you know, just in brief, a globally diversified portfolio that has passive, you know, whether it's an ETF or whether it's a nice active fund manager that tries to invest alongside global markets, you can go and continue your life. We'll take care of the diversification aspect. And I guarantee you, whether it be DeepSeek, whether it be OpenAI, you don't have to worry, because naturally those companies, if they become big enough, will enter your portfolio and you can still continue doing your day-to-day life. And that's the beauty. Within the top 10, within the S&P 500, nobody 10 years ago heard of NVIDIA. NVIDIA just happened to go into the S&P 500 naturally as part of the process. So those are the types of things you can do and have exposure to these things without even blinking.
You make a very good point. Your last two paragraphs are why the long-term view matters, and we've talked about that on many occasions. But your final paragraph says the bottom line, the numbers tell a clear story, and you can't ignore the numbers and the statistics. You can ignore blind patriotism, and I don't want to be disparaging about the JSE Securities Exchange, because it's a fine exchange and it's well run, but really the opportunities are less than they are opportunities are overseas. And again, it's not putting the JSE down. It's just saying, okay, there's a couple of companies I like, but there's nothing new. There's nothing that really, as we said earlier on, excites us, Aaron.
Nothing that excites us particularly. And at the same time, just by embracing a strategy, you know, rooted in simplicity. I always like the saying, less is more.
Yes.
A lot of the very wealthy people who like to dress, you know, the fashion icons always say less is more. It's the same with investments. You can just have one or two or three funds. You can have active and passive and just a great diversified portfolio, and it's quite exciting. And at the same time, if you are interested in, you know, taking a little bit of a you know, your capital and investing in the likes of certain narratives that you enjoy, that you feel would benefit in the longer term, then that's also fine. But that's exciting, whether it be a Tesla because of artificial intelligence that they have, or autonomous driving, or whether it's Nvidia and the chips, or ASML, or anything Chinese that you feel would disrupt that AI race, then the world is your oyster.
Great analysis, Aaron. Thank you very much for your time. Aaron Ruttenberg is from Brenthurst Wealth, and that was It's My Money. It's My Money was brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, an award-winning boutique wealth management company.